Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you backstage and behind the scenes with the stars and creators of the hottest shows on Broadway, off Broadway, and beyond. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to two of Britain's acting greats, Eileen Atkins and Jonathan Pryce. A regular presence both on stage and on screen, Atkins has done everything from joining the Royal Shakespeare Company to co-creating the TV series Upstairs, Downstairs to playing Queen Mary in The Crown. She's appeared on Broadway in shows including Doubt, Indiscretions, and The Killing of Sister George. Pryce, meanwhile, is well known both for screen roles in movies like Brazil and TV shows including Game of Thrones, and he's won Tonys for his performances in Miss Saigon and Comedians. The two of them are now back on Broadway, playing the central couple in Florian Zeller's play, The Height of the Storm. Atkins and Pryce are both here with me now to talk Broadway controversies, favorite roles, and the play the two of them want to do together next. Hi, Eileen and Jonathan. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Hello.
Thank you.
So, In the Height of the Storm is an elliptical and sort of elusive play, and for quite a bit of it, we as audience members don't quite know what's going on. Are we, what's real, what isn't? Are we in someone's head? And if so, whose? You know, for quite a lot of it, I feel like the only thing really anchoring us is the relationship between your two characters, even though they're elements of your stories that we're not quite clear on. Well, first of all, how do you describe to people when they ask you, what is this play about? Because it's hard to describe to people.
Well, you try not to describe it because you try to... It's there as a piece of theatre for the audience to come in and discover. Mm. If you say too much about it, it could possibly mislead them, or, you know, it might not be what they're seeing. Essentially, it's a love story, mm-hmm. About a long-lasting relationship and what happens to one partner when the other one dies, and what it means to the family and the reverberations within the family setup. And it's presented in a way that the audience can... they're asked to discover for themselves what the play is about, and on a basic level, who is dead, who is alive, who's surviving, what one daughter thinks of the other daughter. And it's a wonderfully satisfying puzzle.
Mm. Yeah. Do you, as actors, as you're particularly in those early scenes when we as the audience don't quite know what's happening, what was important to you to sort of hold on to and to get across to us? Did you talk about sort of what we the audience needed from you as actors to sort of help us navigate what was going on?
I never think consciously what does the audience need. I'm just given a part and try and do what the director guides me to doing if I'm muddled. I don't know. I just had an instinctive feeling for this play, and that's all I can say.
Do you know why? Do you have a sense of why?
Well, I can only say... And this isn't the question you've asked me.
That's quite all right.
But I can't explain how things work. We just work together very well right from the beginning. But I'd like to say that Jonathan has just described brilliantly how you should come to this play and what. But because if you say it's about old people and things like that, I just want to tell a story that happened with one of the understudies who's out front watching it when we were on tour. And there were an old couple came in and sat in front of her. And the usual thing, you know, they'd been married for years. They weren't talking much to each other. The man wasn't talking at all. The woman was talking about, have you got a program? And he was irritable. And by the end of this play, they walked out with his arm around her. And she very close to him. So that is the feeling I got when I originally read the play. I thought, thank God it's not depressing. and somehow it isn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you, is there a, I, when I saw the show the other night, and as we were leaving, my companion said, well, wow, we still don't really know what was real. And I thought, don't we? I feel like I was given, by the end of that show, I had a very clear idea of what was being depicted on stage. Am I right? Do you have a, without telling well, us what I it is, that, do you
that,
have a...
I think that final image does tell the story.
Right.
If you don't.
I think so too. I thought so too, but... Good.
I mean, to answer your question about what the audience needs and what... Yeah. I mean, like Eileen, you don't really... obviously, you have an ear to the audience all the time and hope they're getting what you're doing. But what we are doing, even though the play is fragmented and jumps about a bit, you're playing it in the moment. So there's no hint of I'm playing it like a dead person. We are right, playing, right. We are alive and well in that moment, and then the moment changes to something else.
Right.
That's what makes it interesting, actually, yeah. For actors. Yeah. That's what makes it very interesting to play, because you're endlessly just putting yourself in another situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not all growing gradually. You just go into it, and that's fun.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Had you two ever worked together before?
No, sadly.
No. Oh.
Well, no. I'm a lot older than him. I'm only in old age can we manage to be husband and wife.
And how did you find each other as co-stars? Jonathan, how would you describe your always, co-star as an actor? How would you characterize her?
I have always admired Eileen's work for the many, many years we've both been at it. It was an absolute delight to know that she was going to play my wife. Mm. And that's it, really. And we hit it off as actors, as co-workers, and also personally. We get on together really well. We're very fond of each other, I think.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it makes it a lot easier to be on stage when the relationship is like that.
The interesting thing is you don't know how you are going to work with someone, do you?
No,
you can admire someone very much in the theatre, and then when you come to work with them, wish you weren't. in this case, it was terrific, because I had admired Jonathan from when he was a small boy. No. I'd seen his, first time I noticed him was the comedians, and I always went and watched him after that. And I did say to our director, "Is Jonathan all right having me as a wife? I'm awfully old." And I was switched out of the way.
Yeah, no,
it was fine. No. So. Yeah.
I've got a dodgy knee, so it helps my aging process.
I see.
Just about walk.
I see. Did, when the project first came to you, was there something in it, theme or a subject matter or something? What do you have a memory of what in particular you responded to that made you want to work on it?
Well, I knew I liked Zeller's work.
This is Florian Zeller, the playwright.
And so I was very, and also Christopher Hampton, who I've worked with before, who translated it.
Right.
We did Carrington together that Christopher wrote and directed. So I was really interested to get this script done. And after the first reading, disappointed to get this script because I didn't know what on earth it was about. Mm. And it took a second reading when it began to be clearer. And by the third reading, I was in tears at the end of it, when I knew exactly what it meant to me and what the play, what it was going to be like to perform. So I then leapt at it, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, I didn't immediately jump on the first reading. I thought, I don't quite know what this is really about at all. But they're very young people in my agency, and I had one of them read it because my older agent was a bit dodgy about it too. And I thought, let the young people read it. Mm. And they loved it straight away. So I thought, and then I went back to it and really liked it a lot. When we worked on it, I began to like it a lot. That's when I began to like it.
Yeah.
Do you enjoy working in New York, being on stage in New York?
Oh, I love New York.
Yeah?
I mean, I think this is my seventh or eighth
Yeah,
Broadway
that's a,
show.
Something like
something
that.
Like
yeah.
That.
Yeah.
So everybody knows I love New York and lived over here quite a bit.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you me too. Yes, yeah. I enjoy being in New York. And I really wanted to come back and do this play because on Broadway, at least, I've not done a straight play since Comedians in 76.
Wow. Yeah.
I gave myself to the musical theater.
Yeah, you gave it, I was just gonna...
but I did, at BAM, I did The Caretaker. And,
oh, that's right, yeah.
A few years ago, not many years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, yeah. Did Merchant of Venice at the Lincoln Center.
Right.
But I do enjoy working in the theater here. It's really interesting. I mean, you asked me earlier before we started recording about the audiences
yeah.
here. And whether we're doing the play is the same as we did in London. I think the play is ultimately the same production, but the audience feels very different.
Right.
I think maybe it's because I had taken for granted the London response, that they got things immediately or they laughed immediately. Mm. And I'd taken that for granted. And I sort of, when this audience was a bit more listening and a bit slower to laugh, I was thinking, oh, it's not as good, but it's just my expectation is different. And I think the more confident we get as we're playing, and we are finding new things
yeah.
here,
yeah.
even after playing it for 3 months in England,
right.
I'm finding new things in the character. New nuances, really, not many new things. I just know that by the end of the play, whatever I think of the response, that the response from the audience at the end of the play is heartfelt and genuine and right. and really, yeah, it's wholehearted from them.
Yeah. Do you have, when you think of the work that you've done on Broadway, do you have any memories, fond or otherwise, that really stand out for you in terms of what you think of as your... I don't know, your sort of signature Broadway experience for you, sort of emotionally?
I've loved nearly everything. Only one play I didn't like doing here.
Oh.
But we'll keep quiet.
Are you
going to
talk?
That.
Okay.
We'll keep very quiet about that. No, what I loved most was shown the example of it, was shown most in when I played Doubt.
Mm, yeah.
Because... never in England would you get the audience responses mm-hmm. as you got that, because they seem to forget here that they're in a theatre,
oh, yeah.
and or that there is a bit of fact that they're very, almost more than Britain, they're used to television, and they come in with the same feeling, so they shout back at you, mm-hmm. and as they did in Doubt, which
yeah.
was wonderful, but the response from the audience is always more. Either way, whether they like it or they don't like it, here. And I quite like the directness of it. I quite like that. And my goodness, if they like it, they really show you.
Yeah.
That's lovely, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember seeing Doubt. I didn't get a chance to see you in it, actually, but I do remember there were gasps. We did plenty of gasping, we Americans.
Yeah.
yeah. What about you, Jonathan? What do you think of as your... kind of favorite Broadway experience?
I've done so few. Each one's a favorite.
Mm.
Comedians in 76, 77 was... that was a very exciting time to be in New York. It was New York that you don't see now.
No.
8th Avenue was an absolute cattle market. And kind of thrilling in a way. And doing that play, which was... socially quite hard-hitting, and the audience had to find their way into it, because it was essentially about British political issues, but
right.
some issues were universal. And I remember, like Eileen, the audience responding vocally when I would do the second act stand-up piece, and people would start crying and sobbing and moaning. And I'd have to backpedal a bit because I thought I was just inducing terrible things in the audience. And one night, when I was attacking the dummies, the two figures, one man started blowing his whistle rather loudly, and the producer was in the theatre and went to him and said, "What are you doing?" He said, I'm sorry, I thought I was being attacked. And that was his mugger's whistle.
Oh, my God.
So it's had quite an effect on people.
Yeah.
And then Miss Saigon was... the best way to be in New York is if you're in a hit show. There's nothing better.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was just a wonderful experience.
You know, Miss Saigon is sort of interesting because the conversation that...
I wish I hadn't brought it up now.
We're having... I just want to know what you think of it. Just because we're spending a lot of time now talking about sort of, you know, diversity and representation. And when you were initially going to come over in Miss Saigon, there was a... It was sort of a flare-up of what became something we talk about more regularly now in terms of diversity. Do you, looking back on it, what do you...
Well, you see, the extraordinary thing that happened at the time was I'd been playing it in London for a year with a completely diverse cast.
Right.
Everybody of any ethnicity was playing anything. Mm. And not one of them was Vietnamese. And still in New York, not one of them is Vietnamese.
Right.
So it was a bit of a shock to be told that you couldn't play this because you're not Eurasian. Whereas I'd come from a background in theatre in England where they're working with the Royal Shakespeare Company, who are pioneers in diverse casting.
Yeah, right.
Yes, yes.
And I played Macbeth with a multiracial cast. And... I expected the same thing to happen in New York.
Right.
So it was a bit of a shock, but it was a really good and worthwhile argument to have had.
Right.
And very, very good things have come out of it. So that there is colorblind casting and everything else that goes with it, and opportunities for everyone are opened up. But at the time it was a bit hurtful.
I imagine.
I just remembered that I had a smidgen of that when we did one of my big flops here. I'm now going to forget the name of the show, with Ian McKellen and Ian McShane. A Russian play.
This was about 15 years ago, right?
We were playing.
We know what you're talking about.
It was a Russian play, and we were playing.
Not The Promise.
Yes.
No, The Promise.
Thank you.
Oh, The Promise.
You.
Oh,
Promise.
Okay. Yeah.
The Promise.
A drama school staple.
And to our horror, we got to the theatre and there were mounted police and a huge crowd saying, "Don't enter, don't enter." Mm. And, why should English people being playing Russians?
Yeah.
And we were... It was a horrible business, pushing your way through the crowd. But we only lasted 3 weeks, so that was that. But, I mean, I was just pleased we only lasted 3 weeks because I didn't want the riot to go on, and it was unpleasant. And,
we've had a similar thing in England now with a play that is... it's an American play, but Jewish falsettos.
Oh, right, yes.
And it's about a Jewish family, and there isn't one Jew actor.
Oh, yeah, I've read a little bit about that, yeah.
And so a large number of Jewish actors, performers, writers subjected to this. And all I could think of was, well, there goes my career. So I go from Jewish character to Jewish character.
Right.
But it's a very narrow argument to have, that if you can only play your own ethnicity, then theatre's dead. I mean, it's not going to survive.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in anything, you should just have the best person you can find for the part anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That is the answer, as far as I'm concerned, anyway.
Yeah. I feel like both of you throughout your careers have moved very easily from theatre to TV to film, and I have thought that, at least traditionally, UK actors have an easier time of that, thinking sort of more holistically about the kind of media they can appear in, because you can live in London and do all three. You can do stage and theater and film, and then at least it's changing a little bit, but in the U.S., you know, you used to have to choose, well, I'm going to go to the coast that has the TV.
Well, movies, historically, you know. We didn't have that choice. That's why, you know, there wasn't enough film.
Yeah.
Obviously, there wasn't enough television for you to focus on one.
Yeah.
And it was by necessity you moved between film and TV theater.
Do either of you have a preferred medium?
Yes, I do, absolutely. I'm not too happy on film. I've sometimes been happy if I get with certain wonderful directors, but mostly I'm much, much happier on the stage. Mm. But Jonathan, I think, is brilliant on film and happy, I think, aren't you?
I am happy on film.
Yes.
He's brilliant. I just seen his new film, The Two Popes.
Yeah, The Two Popes.
And it's simply wonderful. Watching Jonathan and Anthony Hopkins together is a dream. And it's a wonderful movie.
Yeah. Is it the process that you don't like, Eileen?
Yes, I'm quite happy with TV. When we started out having ordinarily like 4 weeks rehearsal for TV when it started out.
Right.
I like having a rehearsal. Mm. I don't like going in, somebody else having decided what I look like completely, having things stuck on me, going meet someone that I might not even have met before, and do a scene. And I cope with it. I do the best I can, but I'm not happy.
Right. Yeah. And do you have a preferred medium?
I kind of separate them. They're very different disciplines in a way. But like Eileen, the best experiences come when you can spend time with the script and rehearse. Like we did with Glenn Close and I doing The Wife.
Oh, yeah, right. Uh-huh.
We spent time together with the director and the writer, table rehearsals. And those rehearsals went on throughout the filming. We'd meet after dinner often and go through the next day's work. And that was a fulfilling experience. And The Two Popes, quite similar, but it's really a two-hander that's opened up in flashbacks to Argentina. So it's a conversation between Tony Hopkins and myself. I think because Tony hasn't been on stage for a long time, but he does have a theatre background, and we worked at it as if it was a play,
We should say that this movie comes out. It just premiered in a couple of film festivals earlier in the fall, and it comes out later this year.
It's on screen November 27th, and then it's streamed on Netflix after that.
That's right. It's a Netflix produced film. Yeah. So you each have roles that you are particularly known for. Are there roles that for you personally really that you cherish, that you that you know we might not associate with you, or that what of your past work really feels important and special to you?
Well, I'll go first while I think.
Okay.
Comedians was a very important play for in itself, and it was great for me. It kind of introduced me to America and all that stuff. And there's like a series of stepping stones, which you'd Hamlet in 1980, and then doing Miss Saigon when I'd never done a musical before, and that was a great experience. I absolutely loved doing it. And
why were you interested in pursuing musical theater? You sort of,
I wasn't.
Really?
I had no desire to. It wasn't an ambition.
Yeah.
Two things happened. I was playing Macbeth at Stratford and organize a cabaret after the first night in the Dirty Duck Theater. The Dirty Duck Pub, sorry. Mm. And I sang Witchcraft. Backed by my three witches, and with Simon Russell Beale accompanying us on piano. And my agent at the time, Jimmy Sharkey, said, I'd forgotten you could sing, you should do a musical. And I said, yeah, I'd quite like to, because I'd just been to see Les Miserables. And I thought, they are having the best time. It's very emotional, it's very moving, all the audience are in tears. and it doesn't seem to be costing them anything. And I was playing Macbeth and kind of felt like beating my head against the wall trying to, you know, do that part.
Right.
And it was a coincidence that Michael Crawford, you can edit this story down as much as you like.
This is
Michael Crawford
actually
was leaving Phantom.
Right.
And my agent also represented Michael, and he said, how would you like to do Phantom? And I said, well, I don't know. And I went and met with the musical director of Phantom, and I worked with him for a few sessions, and he reported to Lloyd Webber and Hal Prince that I could sing the role.
Right.
And then I went and met them, and they were kind of offering it to me, and they said, have you seen it? And I said, no, I haven't. So I went to see it the next night, and this will shock and horrify millions of people. I didn't like it. I didn't think I could. I mean, everyone was wonderful in it. It was a fantastic production, but I didn't think I could bring anything different to it, and I would just become part of the machine.
Right.
So then we cut to a year or so later, and they're casting Miss Saigon.
Right.
And Nick Heitner, who I didn't know, said, the person we need for this role of the engineer is Jonathan Pryce, if only he could sing. And Cameron McIntosh said,
Well, I know for a fact.
So, right. So I went and met with them, sang for the composers.
Right.
And they... I remember auditioning on the stage of the London Palladium, and I was thinking to myself, if this goes no further, at least I've sung on the stage of the London Palladium, which I grew, as a kid, grew up sort of watching, seeing on TV and great variety theatre.
Yeah.
And then they came up on stage and they said, yes, we'd like you to do it. And I remembered my agent's words, don't say yes to anything. So I said, I'll think about it. So anyway, it was it happened. It was great.
Yeah. What about for you, Eileen? What feels
goodness, nothing as good as that. Well, except that I think, like Jonathan, you started out talking about, the first thing that makes everybody notice you, and the first thing for me was, and I don't think anybody would remember it, because... we played in England in 1965, so I must have been here with it in 1966.
Right.
And it was called The Killing of Sister George.
Yeah.
And it was, which it didn't strike me at the time, it was, but it was the first gay play. The Children's Hour by Lillian Hellman had sort of touched on the subject, but not. It wasn't explicit.
Yeah.
This was very explicit. Mm. I just thought it was vaguely funny play. But I didn't particularly want to be... I was desperate for a job when I went up for it. But I thought I was quite wrong and didn't like the play and kept telling them I was wrong. And then the third callback, I said, I don't know why you keep seeing me. You need a little tiny China doll of an actress to play this. And they said, yes, we know we do, but we can't find one. And you're the best of the rest. And then I had no idea. When we opened at the Bristol Old Vic, we heard the seats going up as people left drove at seeing something so shocking.
Yeah.
And then we'd played it in London for a year, so we'd got totally used to it. And then coming here, the excitement about this play, and the word then wasn't gay, of course, it was lesbians. And as we got into the first cab we got into, the cabman said, I hear you two are playing lesbians.
Well, wow.
You know, I mean, it didn't stop. And because I was the only one, I was the youngest in the company, and... I was the first person to turn up here in a real miniskirt. And, double page spread in Women's Wear Daily with all my clothes and everything. It probably went to my head. I probably was disgraceful while I was here. But that first time, I will never, ever forget.
Yeah.
It was so exciting.
Yeah.
Nothing. I'm having a lovely time here now, but it could, you know. Well,
just wait for the miniskirts.
That's exactly right. And you're also a writer, Eileen. Tell me about sort of what your inspiration is and how you think about writing fitting into your acting career.
I don't call myself a writer.
No.
I think I have very good ideas because upstairs, downstairs.
I mean, that seemed to work. Yeah.
That's what.
That seemed to work. It was
a very, very good idea. I mean,
yeah.
Jean Marsh and I were the first people to think about the lives of the servants. Yeah. Servants' lives had not been on the screen at all. So I'm very proud of that idea.
Yeah.
We did a storyline for it. But they wouldn't, because we'd never written, they wouldn't let us write an episode.
Right.
We chipped in all the time. And of course, Jean made a big success. I never wanted to be in a series because I didn't want my time taken up playing one part for too long.
Right.
I always felt there wasn't enough time. I'd got to get other things in. And it wasn't my cup of tea in those days.
Yeah.
And then I had another good idea, which was... The House of Elliot, and I think there's a third one in there somewhere. And of course, but I call myself an adapter because the two things that have gone on screen have been adaptations.
Yeah.
Mrs. Dalloway, which I love that film.
Yeah,
and now there's just been Vita and Virginia, but that is not my script. So, I did have a script, but the director preferred to have her own.
Right. Yeah.
And I couldn't be bothered to argue.
Right. 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 Yeah. So you think of yourself more as an actor? Or do you? Is your primary activity actor?
I'm afraid I like the old word actress.
I
really love it.
Great.
No, but it upsets people.
Yeah.
I don't think of myself as a writer.
Right. Yeah.
I scribble away a lot of the time, but I'm not a great writer.
Right. Yeah. And what's we talked about the two popes. What's next for you after In the Height of the Storm and the two popes?
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. It's quite a nice feeling. And I'm looking for. I've done a lot of promotion for the two popes, and I'm looking forward to doing more.
Right.
And then we'll see.
Yeah. And do you know what's next for you, Eileen? Or?
Well, I'm afraid I do a very funny series. I mean, it's not very funny. But I mean, a very enjoyable series called Doc Martin.
Oh, yes,
which
yes. That's been on for a while now.
Which is good fun and to do. And, I mean, they've asked me for... we do it every other year, and I've just done a set of eight.
Mm.
And they've already asked me to do another set of eight in... 18 months, nearly 2 years' time.
Wow, all right.
Which is right. Well, but I may or may
nice
not.
Nice to have something to look forward to, though, isn't it?
It is nice.
Yes.
It is nice to have something to look forward to. So I may or may not do that.
Yeah, yeah. Final question. What is the next play that the two of you would like to star in together?
I would have loved to have done... I've been close to it a number of times, and it's never happened. I did it on stage, a rehearsed reading with Uta Hagen playing Martha, and I think we'd be a very good Virginia. Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Yeah. What do you think about that?
Who is Afraid of Virginia Woolf? Two very old people.
I wish I've been actually. I have been trying to think of plays with wonderful parts for an old couple, and I've not been able to think of anything. So I don't know. That sounds a good idea to me.
Yeah. Well, we look forward to seeing it. Please bring it to Broadway after it's a big hit on the West End. Thank you both. Thanks for taking the time to chat with me.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
That was Eileen Atkins and Jonathan Price, now starring together in The Height of the Storm, running at Manhattan Theater Club's Samuel J. Friedman Theater through November 17th. If you like what you're hearing on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, I'd very much appreciate it if you took the time to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, or tell a friend. Next week, I'm talking with another big Broadway name, Kristen Chenoweth, returning to Broadway later this fall with a concert engagement celebrating the release of her new album, For the Girls. Until next time, see you at the theater.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at SuppsMusical.com.